For the next 60 minutes, it's Great Tracks and Sidetracks with me, Peter Fleming, broadcasting from Mahara Place in Waikanae on 104.7 Coast Access Radio. Great Tracks and Sidetracks, yes, great tracks of music. Sidetracks are bits and pieces from the International Express, which sort of keeps you up to date a little bit with the odd things that are going on back in the old UK. But as always, we've just got lots and lots of music. I'm going to start with Donna Summer. Just get us all in the mood, eh?
We'll be right back.
Well, before we head to the UK, let's have a quick look at what the situation is at the food bank just down the road here in Parapram, Capity Food Bank. I like to promote it every week if I can on this programme. And my wife sends me the latest information she has on shortages. They're generally very similar, but you pick and choose from these. Hopefully, you know, when you're in the supermarket doing your weekly shop, put a few extra items in your trolley. And if you're at Pack and Save or New World, then once you've paid for everything, don't forget to pay for it, at the checkout desk, then put the selected items into the boxes that are supplied there for the food bank. So at the moment, they're looking for pasta sauce, 2-minute noodles, milk powder, sugar, jam, honey, Vegemite and Marmite, cereal, oil, Milo and hot chocolate, UHT milk, desserts of various sorts, and dry spaghetti. And then on the other side, on the cleaning hygiene side, toothbrushes, toothpaste, hand wash, laundry powder, laundry liquid, shampoo, conditioner, dishwasher liquid, toilet paper, pads, liners, and oats. Oats? I don't know what that's doing there. It should be on the other side, I think. Anyway, right, also low stock. They've got, they would like muesli bars and meal sauces and soap and cleaning products. But apparently they have plenty of baked beans, tinned tomatoes, tinned fruit, tea, soup, rice and pasta. We have plenty of. So bear that in mind. I know they're very tempting ones to get, things like baked beans and tinned tomatoes. So they've got plenty of those. So try and find something else. Pasta sauce, that's always a goodie, isn't it? And noodles, do a lot with those. There we are then. That's the latest I've got here on the situation at the Capity Food Bank there in Parapram. So donate your food at the supermarkets or go online, get the information for their bank account and donate some money.
Yeah.
and so to the International Express. Now, I've mentioned a few times in over the last year, I suppose, there is increased consumption of zero alcohol drinks. And quite honestly, I think it's a great idea. I think it's wonderful if you can go out for a drink with your mates or, well, whatever, you know, and without having consuming any alcohol, you can drink a drink that tastes like it. And I think it's absolutely perfect. But 0% drinks outlawed for young teens, and this is in the UK, of course, under 18s are set to be banned from buying alcohol-free drinks amid fears they are a gateway to real booze. Well, a particular MP said, "This is utterly bonkers. Ministers are banning sensible zero alcohol choices for 16 and 17-year-olds while claiming they want safer drinking and lower drink drive limits. A pint of 0% Guinness is not a gateway drug." No, it's very good, actually, if you get the chance to try it. I managed to pick up some very cheap cans in Woolworths here a couple of weeks ago. And, yeah, zero alcohol Guinness is great. Laws allow the sale of beer, wine or cider with a meal to 16 or 17-year-olds if they are with an adult and do not make the purchase themselves. I mean, that's quite sensible. Take your children, your 16, 17-year-olds, to a restaurant and they can have perhaps a glass of wine or something. There are no rules stopping youngsters buying no alcohol drinks at any point. Well, Health Minister Ashley Dalton defended the ban. He said there is some evidence to suggest that exposure to alcohol-like products, even if low or zero alcohol, can normalise drinking and become a gateway to alcohol consumption. Earlier alcohol use initiation is linked to a higher risk of harmful drinking later in life. I don't know. I mean, I'm of the generation when, you know, as a child and you sat there, I don't know, what, 10 years old, you might, perhaps a bit old, 12, no, only 10. And at Christmas time, you'd be slipped a little port and lemon, lots of lemon and a tiny dash of port. The theory being, start them early and they won't be experimenting when they get a bit older. I'd like to say I don't think it did me any harm. Anyway, there we are. A little bit more argument now on the business of 0% alcohol drinks.
I'm not in love, so don't forget it. It's just a silly phase I'm going through. And just because I call you up, don't get me wrong, don't think you got it made. I'm not in love, no, no. Upon the wall.
Samuel Pepys. Well, I mentioned that name, and I think you can probably all immediately imagine this sort of curly, bewigged fellow who was famous for writing his diary. He was quite famous for other things as well. He served as an official in the Navy Board and as a Member of Parliament. And yes, he had no maritime experience. He rose to be Chief Secretary to the Admiralty under both Charles II and James II through patronage, diligence, and his talent for administration. His influence and reforms at the English Admiralty were important in the early professionalisation of the Royal Navy. Well, compare that to an article in the paper here, which says, "School drops Pepys' name over abuse." Oh, here we go. Well, it's fashionable, isn't it? Students at Samuel Pepys' old school have voted to ditch his name from one of its five pastoral houses due to his behaviour towards women. What, you cry? Well, Pepys' house at Hinchingbrook School, Cambridgeshire, is named after the 17th century diarist who attended the then Huntingdon Grammar in the 1640s. Parents got an email. No, they received an email. Got an email. Parents got an email last year saying recent research revealed actions that were harmful, abusive, and exploitative, especially in his relations with women. Where do they dig this stuff up? After a consultation, the school voted by 1,764 votes to 1,054 to look for a new figurehead for the house. Principal Andy Hunter said he is proud of how the school conducted itself, adding, "The students have been curious, reflective, and above all, respectful throughout." He said there are no plans, however, to rename the school's Pepys Building, which is a modern block housing the geography department. A little bit of sense. Well, I had a quick run through Wikipedia on Samuel Pepys. No mention in there about his poor bad attitudes towards women or anything else. So, who knows? Who are these people that they go digging around, determined to find some kind of scandal or abuse on people, aren't they? They'll probably find out his name crops up in the Epstein files next. I love the colourful clothes you wear. The sunlight plays upon her head. I hear the sound of a gentle move on the wind that lifts her perfume through the air. I'm picking up her vibrations. She's giving me the excitations. I'm picking up her vibrations. She's giving me softly smile, I know she must be kind. In her eyes, she goes with me to a blossom room. I'm picking up her vibrations. She's giving me the excitations. I'm picking up her vibrations. She's giving me
vibrations are happening with her. Gotta keep those love good. Vibrations are happening with her.
I thought the following article was well worth reading out and mention. If you've been to France or Belgium, then you'll be fully aware that there's a lot of cemeteries there from the last war with the victims of the war, the army and the navy and the air force as well. And the British cemeteries there are in France and Belgium incredibly well looked after. And of course, if you go to Ypres, you can go to the Menin Gate, where every day there is a short ceremony held to honour all the thousands who died during the First World War. So I was interested to read this, that it's called Team's Debt of Honour. 80 years on, a dedicated team continues painstaking research for fallen war heroes. And this is the Netherlands. The Netherlands continues to repay a debt of gratitude more than 80 years after it was liberated. In the final stages of the Second World War, it became clear that tens of thousands of Dutch, Allied and German soldiers had been killed in the country. There had also been a huge number of civilian casualties, including concentration camp victims, deaths from bomb raids and executed resistance workers slaughtered trying to reach Allied lines. Many soldiers reported missing lay dead on the battlefields in unmarked graves, temporary cemeteries, and even charred vehicles, tanks, crashed aircraft, or shipwrecks. The task of identifying and laying to rest the heroes who fought for freedom fell to the Recovery and Identification Unit of the Royal Netherlands Army. Set up in 1945, it was tasked with the locating and exhuming the fallen and carrying out dignified burials to bring closure to families. Its painstaking work continues, fulfilling a promise to leave no one behind. Now, under the command of Captain Gerrit Jonker, three identification specialists work on between 30 to 40 Second World War cases each year, using DNA, dental records and circumstantial evidence to identify remains. That, I just thought, isn't that wonderful that they do that? Because if you read a little bit later on here, they were talking about aircraft that crashed and have been found. More than 5,500 aircraft were lost in the Netherlands during the conflict, with a large number buried in the ground as remains. I said the Dutch government considers the role of the RIU, which is the unit that are doing all this work, to be of such moral importance it supports work without reservation by committing the funds necessary. I think that's marvellous these days, and when all too often there's not enough money for these things, but to be doing that all these years after the last war and still finding remains of people and burying them properly and notifying, of course, their relations and people who... they're still alive. So, fantastic. Well done. Good for you, Netherlands.
Sitting in the morning sun, I'll be sitting when the evening comes, watching the ships roll in. Then I watch them roll away again, yeah. I'm sitting on the dock of the bay, watching the tide roll away. Ooh, I'm just sitting on the dock of the bay, wasting time. I left my home in Georgia, headed for the Frisco Bay, 'cause I've had nothing to live for and look like nothing's gonna come my way. So I'm just gonna sit on the dock of the bay, watching the tide roll away. Ooh, I'm sitting on the dock of the bay, wasting time. Nothing's gonna change. Everything still remains the same. I can't do what 10 people tell me to do, so I guess I'll remain the same. Listen, sitting here resting my bones, and this loneliness won't leave me alone.
this 2,000 miles I roam, just to make this dock my home. Now I'm just gonna sit at the dock of a bay, watching the tide roll away. Ooh, I'm sitting on a dock of a bay, wasting time.
You know, it seems to me that you don't go back far, and the word drone was only associated with a type of bee, not a worker bee, but a bee that mated with the queen, and they, drones they was called. Well, of course, that's the last thing you think of now, and drones are very much associated, sadly, with the battlefield, of course, with totally changing the face of warfare in the Ukraine. And also, they talk about for more peaceful uses. And here we are, liftoff for Amazon as drone flights begin in UK. Amazon has started to test drone flights ahead of launching its UK airborne delivery service later this year. It's not yet launched a delivery service for customers. But when they do launch the service, eligible customers will be able to receive their items within 2 hours as long as the package weighs less than £5. Now, this is in Darlington, which is in the city they've chosen. This is where their launch, where they're going to launch the drones from. So, you know, they obviously have a centre there which will be using drones just to see how it goes. They'll be able to, as long as the package weighs less than £5. Right, there we go. The firm will use its Mark 30 drone fitted with sophisticated tech to avoid obstacles and ensure the safety of people, pets and property. Amazon said that as the drone descends for delivery, its onboard systems identify and steer clear of obstacles such as clotheslines or trampolines, items that might not appear in satellite maps. These same cameras continuously monitor the surrounding airspace during flight. So presumably, you know, you'll be telling it where to put something down, and you'll have to identify a landing area in your back garden. Well, that keeps it. That means that people can't nick them if they just drop them in outside your front door, whatever the package is. Well, funny enough, by sheer coincidence, we had a book of crossword puzzles delivered to us from Amazon today. Well, of course, it just dropped into our letterbox as normal. But, well, who knows? In a few years' time, it'll come buzzing over and be dropped into our back garden, I suppose. Yeah, amazing. Progress.
We'll be right back.
Have you noticed that every year we seem to get more and more days assigned to stranger and stranger subjects? And this is such and such day, such and such day. There's an article here about it. The dates are arbitrary. Their selectors unaccountable. Why does anyone take seriously the demand that January the 2nd should be World Introvert Day, or that February is LGBT plus History Month? And who decided that there should be a National Wiggle Your Toes Day on August the 6th or World Vegetarian Day at the start of October? Predictably, there's quite a few from the trans lobby, with March the 31st classified as International Day of Transgender Visibility. Yes, International Day of Transgender Visibility. Followed by National Pronouns Day on October the 21st. Trans Awareness Week beginning November the 13th, and Transgender Day of Remembrance, November the 20th. Really weird, aren't they? I mean, it's indicating all these things, no Movember and no alcohol, Dry July and things like that. So it always seems very fashionable to do these things, doesn't it? It makes you... And then you feel guilty if you don't do it. They don't sell flags on all these, of course, but that's what... Anyway, yes, it is becoming a bit noticeable. I think there's lots and lots of special days being assigned by unaccountable people.
Why do birds suddenly appear every time you are near? Just like me, they long to be close to you. Why do stars fall down from the sky every time you walk by? Just like me, they long to be close to you. That you were born, the angels got together and decided to create a dream come true. So they sprinkled moon dust in your hair and golden starlight in your eyes of blue. That is why all the girls in town follow you. Just like me, they long to be close to you.
To you.
Here's something for all you animal lovers. Calls to rescue lynx from war zone. An urgent appeal has been launched to save a young lynx in war-torn Ukraine and bring her to safety in the UK. The Big Cat Sanctuary, based in Ashford in Kent, hopes to rescue Ursa, a female Eurasian lynx. It's calling on the public to help fund the rescue and care of Ursa, who was found living in appalling conditions after being illegally kept as a pet. Now housed at a rescue centre on the outskirts of Kyiv, Ursa remains in danger as bombs fall nearby. Born in 2023, Ursa's early life was marked by neglect and illegality. Discovered as a kitten by the organisation URSA, after whom she was later named, she was being kept by someone in their home before the police intervened. So she's now being kept in the Wild Animal Rescue Centre, where she is receiving care. She had a severe intestinal infection, and due to poor nutrition, she's smaller than a lynx of her age should be. And of course, having been hand-raised by humans and lacking size and the skills to defend herself, experts say Ursa would never survive in the wild. So they've got a planning a six-day rescue mission, which includes navigating the war zone, managing international logistics, veterinary requirements, permits, and providing Ursa with a secure habitat within its new small cat rescue centre. The BCS, the Big Cat Sanctuary, needs to raise £100,000. And we all know they will. If you want to donate, you can visit thebigcatsanctuary.org. That's simple enough, isn't it? All lowercase. thebigcatsanctuary.org. Yeah, as I say, I don't think there'll be any problem with raising the money once people get to know about it. It's good, I suppose, that people are prepared to put themselves out and do these sort of things. Son of a gun.
Thank you.
There was an interesting programme on the telly the other night about Pedigree Pet Foods factory in the UK. It's based in Melton Mowbray, the biggest one of it. Interesting to us because niece-in-law, yeah. She's just finished working there after many, many years work for them. And it's a very super place to work. So the programme was quite interesting. A couple of things, really, to make it very, because it's they're producing animal food and things, it's they've got this brilliant idea that everybody can take their pets into work with them every day in the office. So places full of dogs and lying around the place on beds. Got to be well behaved, of course, and you've got to sort of look after them and take care of them. But very welcome, and I should imagine it makes for a rather nice working environment. Obviously, if you don't like dogs, you wouldn't go and work there, but that's probably you're in a minority. And the other interesting thing was that when they're mixing up the different sorts of dog food and coming up with different recipes, that human beings are called upon to taste it, because they said it's all absolutely perfectly edible. There's no junk in there these days. It's all good food, which leads me onto the article I've got in front of me. Pet food is costing the earth. Dogs fed on premium meat-rich pet food can have a bigger carbon footprint diet-wise than their owners, a UK study has found. Researchers calculated the carbon generated by the making of 1,000 dog foods, including wet, dry, raw and plant-based. They found those with the highest impact generated 65 times more emissions than the lowest. Worst offenders tended to be wet, raw and meat-rich products, as well as grain-free dry foods. Yeah, well. The researchers from Edinburgh and Exeter University said large amounts of prime meat, which is good enough to be eaten by humans, pushed up emissions and called for greater use of nutritious low-demand cuts. Lead investigator and vet John Harvey said, "I regularly see owners torn between ideals of dogs as meat-eating wolves and their wish to reduce environmental harm." I'm reading a fascinating book at the moment, and it's a first-hand account from this chap of the Iditarod sled race across Alaska. I'd never heard of it before, and a neighbour lent me the book, and it's absolutely fascinating. If you're not familiar with the thing, the Iditarod is run every year, and it starts in Alaska, and it's 1,000 miles with your dogs and your sled to Nome on the other side of the country. And, well, it's incredibly tough, and because it's cold and snowy and really, it's well worth reading. But the point I was going to make is that he refers in there to the meat that they feed to these dogs, fantastic dogs, these sled dogs. A lot of it is formed from the fetuses of cattle, that are removed when certain cows are slaughtered at the abattoirs. So it sounds pretty revolting. It's all chopped up, roughly chopped up, these fetuses, and converted into food for these dogs. And partway through, because he has to warm it up every day, they have these sort of cookers, and they've got these frozen blocks of this stuff, got other stuff in as well, I suppose. And he'd put a couple of his own meat patties on the top to defrost and thaw, and the everything had melted a bit quick, and they'd sort of slipped into this mess of dog food, and he was trying to bring himself to eat them, knowing that there was nothing that would harm him in this dog food. But I must admit, the thought of eating something like that would take a little bit of doing, wouldn't it? He managed to wipe most of it off before he did have to eat it, of course. Anyway, now, that's not a very pleasant subject, is it? So let's swing over to Ray Charles and see what he's got to tell us.
I can't stop loving you. I've made up my mind to live in memories of the lonesome time. It's useless to say, so I'll just live my life in dreams of yesterday.
Dreams of yesterday.
Those happy hours that we once knew. Though long ago, it still make me blue. They say that time heals a broken heart, but time has stood still since we've been apart.
I can't stop loving you.
I've made up my mind to live in memories of the lonesome time. So I'll just live my life in dreams of yesterday. So I'll just live my life of dreams of yesterday.
And the mellow tones of Ray Charles bring us to the end of another programme in the Great Tracks and Sidetracks series. This is Peter Fleming saying bye for now. Hope you've enjoyed the programme. Have a great week, and I'll be back again just the same time next week. ¶¶
This program was made with assistance from New Zealand On Air for radio broadcast and through the Access Media website. Thank you, New Zealand On Air.